Welcome to the Business Beyond Performance podcast. I'm Joe Staub here with my co-host Matt Powell. This is episode 3 featuring Jake Cox.
What's going on, dude?
Not too much, man. So, you know, obviously this is the pre-intro part of the episode, and Jake was a really good conversation, you know, kind of like us, a guy who was a strength coach and I was also now into the business real estate side specifically. And you never met him before this, right? You would talk to him but never met him?
Yeah, absolutely. So we went back and forth, a few calls, a few text messages, and we just absolutely clicked, man. I was super excited for you to kind of put this together and bring him on the episode. You did a great job. My favorite thing about Jake is that not only was he a really good coach at, you know, Big 10 universities and Big 12 universities, and even back in my alma mater at Temple for a little while, but he did a fantastic job of making that transition, which can be really tough for people, from being the lead person in his marriage, making all the money, to being kind of on that back seat and that support staff, if you will. That's what he calls it himself. And then being a good job of, or having a good job, excuse me, of being a great investor and a great support system for his wife, which he goes into that we'll get into. What was your favorite part of the episode?
So again, Jake's just a really dynamic guy. And when I first met him, me and him clicked kind of like you. So my favorite part is, again, I just enjoy talking to him. I'll get a phone call or a text message randomly from him about a book to read, about, hey, do you have this related to investments? Or, hey, have you seen this related to athletic, you know, performance, athletic training, sports science, whatever it may be. So he's just a guy who's very like-minded, who I enjoy talking to at any point. And again, has always been very free with his time, and again, willing to give back and give forward to the next person. So he kind of fits right in with us. And there wasn't really any great part of the conversation, I would say, because it was all good. But there was one moment I remember where he really started getting into, you know, the business ROI side. And it was funny because I believe I made a comment like, oh yeah, look at this. You know, it's 3 former strength coaches talking about business. Who would have thought, you know? So, you know, the whole episode was great. There was nothing that stood out, but there was that one moment to me that was pretty nifty. All right, guys, without further ado, episode 3, Jake Cox. Jake Cox, former strength and conditioning coach, multiple stops in the college space.
Yeah.
Temple, Villanova, most recently Baylor.
Yeah.
And a man who I've known for a while now through some people, and has always had a knack for the business side outside of just coaching. And that's why he is here with us today, because he is no longer coaching and he is looking at pursuing some business stuff and maybe dabbling in some coaching.
Yeah, a little bit.
How's that for an intro?
Yeah, that's, I'd say that's 100% spot on, you know, coach. Just really enjoying where I'm at in life. You know, grateful as I'll get up to be where I'm at. You know, 2020 has been a fascinating year for everyone. I'm no exception. And I would just say that you keep getting thrown curveballs, and as long as you're getting on base, we're being successful. You know, if I want to just play in that World Series analogy right now, that's what it feels like for 2020. And I'm just grateful I'm getting on base. And now it's starting to really feel like we're starting to hit a few doubles and maybe a few home runs. So I'm excited to get moving forward into 2021, but still finish out 2020 strong. So
nice, man. Nice. So yeah, last I talked to you, we were BSing. I had written a book. You were looking at being a consultant and kind of just giving back. What's the world? And then actually, hold on, before any of that, how's the family? How's life? Yeah.
So really good, you know, 17-month-old little girl. She just went to bed probably 20 minutes ago. Full disclosure, she went to bed with an empty box of raisins because we didn't have it in our hearts at the end of a very long week already to pull that little box of raisins away from her. So you know what? She won. She won.
Hey.
And
we got boxes of raisins. Even though it's not raisins, we got boxes of raisins in my house all the time.
That's what's up. And you know, so we're doing that. Jen's great. To be just really clear, you know, it's a lot about like managing that. Like this, she's my athlete, you know, she's my number one priority now, along with my daughter. But in a sense, I haven't seen anyone work as hard from a video conferencing Zoom chat world as my wife. You know, I'm completely ignorant to all of it, but what she's done and putting in those hours and that mental strain and physical toll has been, you know, very respectable. So we're all doing good. We're down here in Florida. We're south of Clearwater, Florida, to kind of give everybody where we're at, west of Tampa. 5-minute walk to the beach. I have no complaints. You know, I talk with at least if 2 friends a day. I like to reach out and see how everybody's doing. And I just simply say, let's not talk about me so much, because it just comes off as like, wow, this guy gets a chance right now to go ahead and do some stuff that we've always wanted to. And so that's how fortunate I am. So family's great. We're moving forward. The house is under remodel. So there is stress, but we're moving forward and it's great.
Good for you, man. Good for you.
Yeah, brother.
That was an awesome quote, dude. Calling your wife your athlete and saying how important she is.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and just tell you right now, it's going to get stolen like a mofo. So as long as you're okay with that. Yeah. It's
going. I appreciate it, coach. Yeah. With a beard like that, you can steal it. You can steal it with a beard like that.
Fine, man. Like literally one of the, you got to cover this much ugly somehow. So I'm just doing the best I can, you know, however I can.
Yeah. And you guys know too, it's everything. So it's how can Jen feel? Well, you too. But how can she feel that autonomy with certain decisions, even though she doesn't have the headspace or time to do it? And it makes no sense, because she's in a wheelhouse that creates 20x for the family and does so much good for the community, you know, eventually the world. But how to give her that autonomy and move through that, just as you would any other athlete, and build those relationships that way so she's performing optimally.
That's a great way to look at it. I mean, especially given what she does and where you're at. All right, so let me dive into it. You're probably the parent of the day most days because she's hustling, she's working. How is it? How do you like the transition? I've been there. I did it when I moved out of Hofstra. I spent 6 months just me and my daughter just hanging out every day. And then when my son was born, fortunately, I was working from home and I took some time off. It was me and the two of them for like 2 months. And then COVID, we were us for 3 months. How is it being the guy and you got a little 17-month-old looking at you and you know you're giving her whatever she wants?
I know. It's the best. And I'm not as good as grandma. I'm not as good as mom with certain things, but I am super data. And that's what I'm hanging my hat on. And look, we're going to have fun and we're going to be engaged and we're going to learn, because I know how valuable that is right now, engaging her, because she's always so curious. And she's at the point where you can be like, bring me that. Why is that there? And she's starting to figure out in very analytical sense. I'm really excited to do a Myers-Briggs on her eventually down the road. But it's that. And you do feel that other side of where, hey, when they're talking job scales and they'd always mention the stay-at-home parents worth $120K a year, they're not lying. That's a valuable asset. You're always on your toes and you have to have so much systems and structures in place too. So I'm not that far removed from 4 a.m. wake ups. I'm not doing that anymore, but you're waking up and it's like, oh, we're going to the restroom. Boom. We're boiling water and we're feeding and watering the dog. Then what are we doing? We're packing her snacks. So you get your systems and routines, pre and bedtime routines. Again, it's just shifting those habits and behaviors around to be as efficient with the tasks that you're delegated so that you can control what you can control. And that's how I describe it. It's absolutely been wonderful, because I think about it and I think in the 17 months she's been alive, whether it's between me, my wife, or my mother-in-law, she has had, or whether it was the daycare schools, Primrose, or the one we're at now, she's had some great engagement. She's had some good socializing and she's had people there nurturing her and developing her in those months that really matter, the critical periods. I say critical, but that's probably really 0 to age 25 and beyond too. So really excited, you know, just blessed. Yeah. But you lose a lot of battles. You lose a lot of battles.
So all three of us have a daughter.
Yeah.
And I think, Paul, my daughter's older than your daughter. Clara's 4 turning 5.
Yeah.
So, Yeah.
That's why there's a cooler right there.
Absolutely. Hackettack is 3 going on. I don't even know what she's going on, but she's definitely a three-nager right now. Today she told me, "Dad, you have to do it this way." And I just stared at her for a second and thought my options through and finally just smiled and said, "Okay, yep, let's go.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's try that."
Yeah, let's try.
Yeah, the fastest way to humble your ego, I've learned, is to have a daughter and then have her look at you and say, "No, that's not right."
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like everything you do, just fail fast, but you know you're just failing. Like, and you just keep going. That's it. You know.
Yeah.
Great, great respect for all stay-at-home parents. And I am so grateful that a month ago we got her back into daycare, because now that's a 6-hour gap in the day where I can do some stuff or just breathe. So blessed to have had that whole COVID like 5-6 month period where it was just her and I and right there. But like you said, it's valuable to have that time away too, you know?
So what are you doing mostly with that 6 hours, Jake? I know you've been looking into some different schooling options. I know you've looked into some awesome different ways to connect to people, talking to two friends a day, but so do you have a goal right now? Is there like a specific place you want to head?
Yeah. So that's a great question. So we're looking at, you know, we kind of dissect that wheel of wellness or holistic focus, whether it's, you know, faith, finance, physical, mental, emotional, as far as how my wife and I are doing. And we're focused kind of in three areas now. And with those three areas, one of them is finance. And part of that is due to a remodeling period and moving period, we're like, hey, we're not just like having an irritant of cash. We're not just slightly outside of our systems and behaviors. We're bleeding, like we're hemorrhaging cash, and that's due to a remodel. And we do our best to go, wow, is this short term or is this all of a sudden us? And it's not us. It's us in a sense that when we go places, we've learned, get in right away, get the painting, get the new bathroom, get the remodeling done. Because we've learned why wait, because we've moved every 2 to 3 years. So get it the way you want it, you know, because it has turned out, and we'll work into some of that business stuff that, you know, the properties, one of our biggest financial flaws is don't sell things anymore. Like, we don't have to. So we're going to kind of learn from that, you know, like a hybrid of house hacking with respects to stop selling things. Just buy respectfully, responsibly, do as you need to do, and then move on, because we will eventually move on. And, you know, where we are now is not where we'll be in 5 years, most certainly, with our track record, and it's not where we'll be in 20. But it doesn't mean we should sell this property. It means we should have great HVAC, electric, plumbing, roof. We should have great walls, great bathrooms and kitchens that are functioning and easy to clean and repair, and that meet our needs, but that in 2 years' time, meet the needs of somebody else that's probably also willing to pay another $1,500 over principal, interest, and taxes a month for it. So with that, goal-wise, I think it's stop the bleeding of cash is one. So when you talk about that, Coach, it's, you know, because that's happening. You know, we're doing major renovations, kitchen, 2 of the 3 bathrooms. And there's other things, you know, we sold our previous home, mostly furnished. And so there's a new couch, there's a new entertainment system and things that go along with that. And so you do a 12-month out analysis, you look where the cash pools will be then, you look where investments are right now. And just to kind of move forward with some of that investment, I might have stolen it from Scott Trench from Bigger Pockets Money, but I believe initially when it came to equities and stocks and bonds and learning in that, I'd really learned the power of dollar cost averaging. And so stop placing emotions with the politics, stop placing emotions with the weather, with the market, with the war that's going on, and just realize these things that produce incomes will be there in the future. You will pay more for a truck in the future. Look at the new Hummer. You will pay more for a cheeseburger in 10, 20 years. It might go down at times. You know, a Coca-Cola might go on sale a little bit, but it's going on sale and up to the right. And so when you look at that dollar cost average, so whatever your system is, whether it's $5 a week, whether it's $5,000 a week, just set it and kind of let it go and just check in on it a couple times a year. So taking that with equities, we're now moving that to property as well with respects to, we don't have some grand goal of accumulating 9,000 units. That would be with outside of my scope of care or want, but the scope of 7 to 10 makes complete sense to us, whether that's diversified into farmland, whether that's into single families or quadplex. So I think it's looking at it like that. And it's saying this year, buy another one. Next year, buy another one. In 4 years, we might go from buying one a year to let's buy three a year. Or at that time, we might pivot and we might say, well, even though we're cash flowing X, if we could get $500 more a month from this one property, why don't we recast the note, pay the debt down a little bit more, have an increased HELOC leverage there, and increase our cash flow and reduce the amount of tenants we have. So it's, I mean, honestly, like, you know, you look at it and if you had 10 properties paid off, that's great. If you had 10 properties and they still cash flowed $200 each, that's still great. You know, so you got to find what fits you. And I think we try to dollar cost average, going back to both equities and doors, real estate. So find your system.
Oh, Matt.
Sorry about that. Can you go ahead and break down dollar cost average for anybody who doesn't know what that is? Can you break that down for anybody listening who's like, what the heck is this guy talking about?
Yeah. So in stocks and equities, it's going to come from this. People always try to time the market. Okay. It's an emotional thing. We've heard since we're young, among other things, buy low, sell high. Okay. We've heard that. We've heard that just like your uncle used to say, you know, taxes are the end of all evil or whatever, or, you know, whatever crap you hear, money's the root of all evil, or death and taxes, you know, that's all you have that's certain. But we've always heard buy low, sell high. The truth of the matter is, and again, I come up with absolutely nothing. Just read the books. My favorite is Peter Malouk from Creative Planning. And when he just goes through and he simply talks about, or Jack Bogle passed away, but with Vanguard, dollar cost averaging, even if you time the market and hit like the 10 best days, you're still not that much further ahead. And even if you miss those 10 best days, just by being out of the market, you lose. And just by waiting, like let's say you have $50,000 and you're just waiting to time the market, or you take that $50,000 and you're trying to put in $5,000 a month as opposed to get it in the market sooner, you're wasting opportunity. So what dollar cost averaging goes back to is the money you have to invest routinely. Doesn't mean if you come in a lottery, doesn't mean if you come into an inheritance. If you get those moments, yes, you can go into a bolus of cash towards an investment. And understanding there is no right time and there is no wrong time. So when we do this dollar cost average, if we set our normal savings and our normal investment rates, we can go ahead and invest $500 a month routinely and slowly, as long as we stave off income and lifestyle creep, we can increase that amount each year. So just kind of a setting a routine, consistency with investing money.
Well, I think one of the big things, and me and my wife, so Rach is slowly getting into real estate. She's all over Bigger Pockets. She's all over all the books, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So her big thing, and where we live, we're fortunate to be in the economic position to be getting to the point where we can start to buy and do these things because some of where the area is needs some uplift, right? So I think the biggest thing you hit on is define goals. Who do you want to be? Why? Well, and again, we inherently, right? So I have two things. I'm going into a point, but here's the first one. We're three former strength coaches, right? Current strength coach, two formers, you know. Our degrees, right? Our typical background is human performance, you know, physiology, some behavior modification, some interpersonal skill.
Yeah.
The last 10 minutes, what we talked about, nothing. That anything we did in our actual jobs is what we're talking about. Now, we're all nodding our heads because we know.
Yeah.
And that's because we define goals and we set expectations for ourselves to move into other things. We used our time. We learned. We opened doors. We diversified our skill set. All the things we always preached as coaches. But then also now, all those fundamental tools that we did with athletes, and again, going back to what you said with your wife, we're using that in a business sense. I look at what you just said, define your goals. You know, I'm not trying to own 9,000 units. I'm doing this. Maybe we do this. Maybe we pivot. The fundamental philosophy of goal, process, objective, actions, and I like the OKR system. It's funny how it all translates, and I think that's why this is going to work so well. This as the podcast, what Matt and I are doing is because people who have our background in the process, the planning, and the goal-oriented objective skill set can take that, drive it into some knowledge in a different industry, and then all of a sudden now we're tough to handle because people don't act like us, right? Like every day I deal with normal, good people who work 40 hours and that's what they do, right? People make fun of me because I stay a little later. I show up a little earlier. I do stuff on the weekends and I'm just, oh yeah, I play it off. But what people don't realize is I put in 60 hours this week and that's a vacation.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
I don't know. That was a big ramble, but there's so much from what you just said. What I actually want to ask you now is how core do you think, and everything I just mentioned, your skill set as a strength coach and what you did for people and performance has helped you drive your business IQ and your business process?
Yeah. I would also say it's like, the individuals that talk about work-life balance, well, the ones that end up choosing work that they love so much that they don't ever want or need balance is a positive. So diving into that, when it comes to money, I remember being, we just got let go of Colorado. Jen came in the door. I was so juiced up and hyped up, you know, because I didn't expend that energy from the day. I was like, do you want to go walking? Do you want to go jogging? Do you want to go train? What do you want to do? You want to watch a movie? And it was the end of the week. It was the end of the day. She was pretty exhausted. She sat me down. She said, look, you used to be director of sports nutrition. Now you're director of Cox Family Finance because we're going to make some money here. And I just don't want to know every little detail about what to do with it. And so money development, preservation, and education have become deep passions for me, you know, so much that I love. Most of my chalk talks turn into financial talks. It's something I love so much. So when you do that and you really love human performance and dollar signs in the mixture of the both and the growth and escalation of the both and the preservation of both, preservation of performance on both areas, it makes it easy. And so none of that has actually been a burden to me. I remember that we've spoken and had our financials analyzed by over 10 financial advisors, independent wealth advisors, whether it's Creative Planning, Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo, Edward Jones, you name it. We've had over 10 of those done. We've stayed our same path, but we do that sort of as like a nice little audit check. We have set goals and obtain them. And as you said, sometimes you get 70% of the way and pivot. The way I think you can take things that we've learned and developed is similar. Even in strength conditioning setting, when you're in that first academia setting and you're understanding the physiology of it, you're still not understanding that 8 NCAA hour rule. You're not understanding how does this textbook fit into this time slot. You're not understanding of how that fits into the in-season week 9 after a Tuesday practice lift for that wide receiver. And so you're not understanding from that academia how to develop interns into first assistants or head strength coaches in the quickest amount of time possible. And you're also not understanding how to go about connecting with the rowers coach, because she has a lot to tell you about how to train rowers. And I'm all for that. I'm all in on that. and the administrator who's like, well, maybe we can get you some chocolate milks, versus the same administrator who all of a sudden you have a fully loaded kitchen with expensive fridges and, you know, dishwashers and a stock staff, right? And so those skills that you have to learn throughout the profession are much like what got me excited, because I was purposeful and passionate about money. I mean, some people really aren't, so I can't say everybody is, but it just was kind of a tipping point. Having my wife sit down and tell me that really lit a fire under me, and it said, oh, this is my next job title. You know, if you read 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, what are you as a spouse? What are you doing for yourself? Where are you at the office? Well, so I've got a new job title. So even on as my career changed, I always kept Cox Family Finance. What am I doing as a spouse? So even today I look at those things. So those are my objective areas. And I really focus on saying no to a lot of other things so that I can focus my time and energies and money on those. So developing through that acumen and developing through that education was really easy for us. I just like in strength conditioning, I think you can go faster the sooner you understand 80-95% of this has already been done. What you want to do with supplements has been done. What you want to do with squats has been done. And you need to go visit. You need to go see how everybody's doing in RDL. You need to go see how they're all doing chin-ups. Some aren't that hot, and some only do 2-inch thick revolving handle, acromion width, you know, chin-ups. They do them for a reason. And learn from these little details. Not looking at everything that everybody does that's different in strength conditioning, just like money. Everything, if you're in alternative investments, that's great when you're over $5 million. But when you're in this little smaller space of, you know, zero to I'd say probably $2 or $3 million net worth, you need to find out what works there. And what works there isn't going and grabbing 56 rental properties. What works there isn't trying to buy gold right now, okay? Or getting US Treasury heavy. So that's how I would sum it up. You take those skill sets you learn from the years from the profession, you mix it with passion, and you drive that forward and understand other people already have the path to success that you want. So go learn from them, pay them, spend time with them, read their books, and buy them lunch.
So walk me through this. You just got hired as the CFO of the Cox family, a very illustrious position. Very proud of you. Congratulations. You are the man for the job. So I don't know about you. My initial plan at that point, because I got elected CFO of the Powell family. I know. Yeah. Hold your applause. Hold your applause. So when I did that, I went ahead and I started setting long-term goals. And then I kind of reverse engineered off of there. Did you have a similar plan, different plan?
Similar, right away, it wasn't reverse engineering. It certainly has been now that we've become more knowledgeable of it. And just to cap off reverse engineering, my advice is reverse engineer off of what you think you want to achieve. You want private jets taking you to Cabo, reverse engineer off of that. Like slowly chip away down how you get there. And then realize maybe you don't, because the beautiful part is you might not need the private jet to be owned. You know, you might not need all of that to do that. So initially it just started off with, okay, what's the highest rated book on Amazon? Okay. Who do I know that knows money? Oh, I have a best man who's a CPA. Let's call him. What's he invested in? His dad used to sell life insurance. Just learning about that. Oh, he uses this person for his Roth IRA. And then from there, I remember 8 months later calling him up and he goes, look, we've had some really good discussions probably every week about this. You're at a point where you've surpassed what I know about this. So you need to go find others. And so for instance, going to a financial advisor, any of them, wealth manager, any of the fake titles that they all have, I think it's only independent investment advisor that's the one that's worth any crap. I think a CFP, is great, independent CFP, but it costs nothing to go there and learn. And just as I said, is viewing, like when you go visit any school or any high school or any pro team, seeing what they're all doing with the athletes, it costs nothing to see what they're all doing. And so when you sit down and they analyze your net worth and everything, walking through that. So then at that stage, we started, well, we need Roth IRAs. Okay. So we're saving good. Saving money sucks. Saving money sucks because you lose 1.9% to inflation and 2.3% to consumer inflation or commercial inflation. Excuse me. 1.9 consumer, 2.3 to commercial inflation. Hey, so the quick, dollar dies at 2% a year.
Real quick, break down Roth IRA for us, for the people who are listening and don't know what that is.
Absolutely. So trying to go through IRAs real quick. Let's say you have your employer, 401k or 403b, right? That can actually be converted to a Roth. There's a little box on some institutions, not all, that you can check and you can convert that to a Roth. I'll get that to a second. But initially, your employer is deemed a traditional IRA. Down here, you can go off on yourself and you could go to Fidelity, Vanguard, whoever you want, and you could get a Roth IRA account. You could also sign up for a traditional IRA account. And what Roth means, I think it's named after a senator with legislation, but it simply means you have already paid the taxes on that income. And so you're putting money into a fund after taxes so that the money can accumulate and grow so that you can pull the money out and you have already paid the taxes on that money. Now with a traditional IRA account, independent retirement account, you have not paid the taxes on that money. So it's pre-taxed, which could be good if you believe tax percentages and rates will be less in the future. They won't. Or you believe you'll be living on far less income in the future, which if you like to have a good time, you won't. So I just kind of want to hit that something that's better, the most tax-advantaged account is going to be a health savings account. So if you qualify for a high deductible plan with your employer, you're going to want, and you're young, you know, and there's not a lot of medical expenses, you're going to want to look into a health savings account. And again, this is all for entertainment. This is not financial advice. You can't sue me. But a health savings account is pre-taxed money. It's money that then can be invested. It's not initially. Initially, it just sits there in an account and dies to inflation, and you get about a $3 fee every month on it. But you can invest it in something intelligent like the Vanguard 500. After that, that money can grow, and you could save that till, say, I think the age is 59, where anything before you pull that out on like a little debit card is used for medical expenses. It could be something as small as cough drops or cough syrup, or as big as, you know, your dentist appointment, or, you know, you had a surgery. So you could pay, you could use that money along the way, but however, it's pre-taxed, you can put it in an investment fund, and after a certain age, you can pull that money out with zero penalty and not pay taxes on it. So that's your number one primary tax advantaged account that most people might have access to if they choose a high deductible insurance plan. After that, it becomes a Roth IRA or a Roth employer match policy. After that, it would be a traditional policy, generally from an employer. The way to kind of explain it, let's take the HSA out of it. Here's your preferred steps of performance, okay? Performance. Number one, always take your employer match, no matter what you do. If it's 6%, 2%, take the match. After that, move toward filling up your Roth IRA. That's $6,000, I believe, this year. After that, you can be at a critical moment. We can save for a dream, a real estate investment, a new car, an emergency fund. Or we could take, again, we're on step three, we could take money back and fill up to, I believe, $19,500 into our 403B or 401K. So step one, take the match. Step two, fill up the Roth IRA. Step three, you're kind of a pivot point. It depends on where you're at in life and what you want to achieve.
So three things to add to that. One, we had our fact checker for the podcast look this up. It was Senator William Roth. That's who it was named after. Just in case you're curious, yeah. And then two other things. One, I would definitely recommend that people look into self-directed IRAs as well. I don't know if you've looked at that at all. Another great option for sure for guys out there who are higher income earners, right? Go to an SEC school, you're making $300,000-$400,000 a year someplace in the NFL. Making good money, that's another way for you to invest that long term. But if things don't go out the way you want from your investments, obviously it's still getting the tax benefits, tax shelters, and kind of moving forward with that. And then for the guys like ourselves who have daughters who are going to be expensive as hell, at least mine, if she falls anything like her mama, we need to look at things like a 529 and making sure that obviously the college savings are looked at as well. And there are other programs. 529 is just one of them that comes to mind. So that was awesome information, though. We appreciate it.
529, when you look through it, I think there's something like a U whatever. 529 ends up being the most beneficial to most people in general. Like, do your own research, come up with your own ideas and logic, and absolutely. Yeah, that's where you got to be. That's what we did. And so.
Yeah. So to go back to this again, we're three exercise science-based people. This is not financial advice. This is CFO of the Cox family, which is not a business, which is not regulated, which is unofficial.
That's right.
CFO of the Powell family. I'm the CFO of the Staub family. My wife looks at me and she's like, I don't even care. I just want to be able to buy what I want when I want because, and again, she's not crazy about it, but if she wants to go to the store and get something, she can. So as long as that happens, she's good. So again, this is not advice. This is just, throw that disclaimer out there.
All for entertainment. Yeah.
It's the legal. This is the guys having a drink and a conversation.
Absolutely.
The Stephen Covey reference, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Second podcast in a row, Stephen Covey has come up, which I think I'm willing to bet that we might be able to get through every single one of these and he comes up. I love context relative is how I framed it. It's don't invent fire. I have a good, which leads me into my question. I have a mentor of mine who would always look at me and say, Joe, don't invent fire. And I'd look at him and be like, you're not the first person. You won't be the last. And why spend all that time when you can make a phone call and have someone who's already done it, who knows more, or knows the person who knows more, help you?
Absolutely.
And I think that's one of the biggest things I try and impress, especially upon the people I work with now who are very educated, fresh out of college. It's like, you're inventing fire today. Why? Well, it's like, no, you just invented fire. Like, just call the guy who has the flint. Like,
just stop. Yeah.
So that leads me to the mentors, and you brought it up, and the way you described it, and me and Matt have talked about whether it's, you know, do you have one person you go to, or do you kind of have a tribe and, a group pool of people you connect to? And you referenced something I think is very important.
Yeah. Not
you have mentors and people you go to, and I want to know, is it people or is it a group? And I think it's a group. But then the next thing is the level. And I think that's one thing people don't always realize is you have to understand the level that that person can bring you to and when you need to go up a person. Mm-hmm. Or if you find a unicorn and the mentor you have now can guide you through the whole process for a long period of time. So what are your thoughts on that? Mentors, one to many, and then also knowing when it's time to say, I thank you for what you've given me to this stage, but I need someone else to bring me to that stage.
I agree. I don't want to take strength conditioning advice from somebody who's coughing up a lung, fat and ugly, and just can't jump. Like, that doesn't make sense. So I got to go after big traps with big beards, right, Coach Matt? So
that's why I got tattoos and a beard. I fit in.
Yeah. I mean, this guy knows what he's doing.
I mean, this is two football guys and a track guy. I mean, I'm like a stereotype of them all.
Hey, track's perfect. But when I think about it, Coach, so some of it, you're right. Like, first I went and sought out, you're essentially seeking out the people in the know who can become your mentors. And if you're an aggressive educator, a fast learner, and you don't have your foot off the accelerator, there's not one on the brake, then you can quickly surpass them. There's nothing wrong with that. And it's not as even if you have to like be that aware that you're passing them. Like, for instance, my friend's like, you've passed me, go somewhere else. That was a clear sign for me. So I did. And who knows about money? Some of it's in books, some of it's in the people you meet. Well, find them. I've met two places, you know, we typically go to a resort twice a year. I remember one time I was sitting next to a guy who was from Colorado Springs who owned 50 rental properties. We talked the whole time, the whole time. Then one time I was flying from Texas to Philadelphia. I sat next to a wealth manager. We talked the whole time. He ended up giving me two books that he had in his bag. He's like, I read this one and this one's from my mentor. I haven't even read it yet, but you take them. This is going to be great. And aside from that, you go to, hey, wealth manager for Edward Jones, wealth manager for creative planning, Wells Fargo. Just go and sit and talk to them. You make that time because time is a commitment and you're after a certain goal. So commit.
Let me interrupt you for 1 second. For anyone listening in the college space right now, you get those emails from HR. Those TIA, CRAF, whatever, Vanguard, whoever you have, shows up through your HR department for one-on-one consultations. Great 95% point. Of people delete those emails. They don't even understand what the hell they mean. You are losing out on free education. Take advantage. Professional sports, it's a little different. There's some stuff they build into the systems, especially for player education, which I'm sure staff can take advantage of. But if you're in the college space, they literally give it to you for free and it's one-on-one and it's with someone whose sole focus is to help you take advantage. Sorry. Yeah. I just had, that's something people overlook.
But even to say that, I think three of our 10 financial advisor talks have come through those avenues, whether at Villanova or Baylor or my wife's employer with Fidelity. Those are Kreft, Vanguard, Fidelity, right there. There's three big heavy hitters there where we got free consultations. Morgan Stanley was through her work. And so there's four. And it's free advice, but it's far better and quicker than what you have currently. So it allows you to move that needle faster, accelerate that growth and learning curve. From there, I'd say a lot of it was books. Within the first 2 years, I think I read 22 books on personal finance. After that, I would say I only have a few categories of books that I read per year, and I easily read 80 books a year. You know, it's nothing drastic, but it's certainly more than average. Try not to waste my time with the trash, so everything either comes highly recommended or has 4.5 stars on whatever book purchasing thing I'm buying it from. So that's where I get that information. Coach, you had a second part of that question. What was the second part of that question?
So the first one,
mentors
and everything. And then from there, knowing when to jump from someone. So someone helps you, but you recognize, to your point, your friend said, hey, you're beyond me now. There's my personal opinion. There's very few people, you know, on a scale of 1 to 100 who can get you from 0 to 100. A lot of people can get you from 0 to 20. Some people can get you from 15 to 50. Some people from 50 to 100. So the unicorn is 0 to 100.
Yeah.
How do you know, or how have you gone about the process of finding, oh, shit, they brought me to a 20, but that's all they can do for me now. I need the next.
I think a part of that is it goes back to school. So you really understand and know the material once you're able to teach it. Not just regurgitate it to like your best friend sitting there or whatever, but actually able to educate other students. And I done that. So the first thing is, well, how do we have good behaviors and habits with saving? So where do we go there? How do we live without massive consumer debt? Dave Ramsey's a great start with a lot of that. Well, how do we build a mindset to not only like have scarcity of money, but abundance money? T. Harv Eker is a great sit with that, with the millionaire mindset. Understanding like what really is, The Millionaire Next Door is a great book for that. With understanding retirements and stocks and equities and bonds, or a good portfolio for that, you're not going to be money mastering the game or Unshakable with Tony Robbins or Peter Malouk and a mixture of Dave Swenson or Ray Dalio within those books. And then, well, how do we understand some other aggressive avenues of capital preservation and accumulation? Real estate. So where are we going? You mentioned your wife with bigger pockets. And then what books are being mentioned there? Who are they talking to? And then I am so blessed and fortunate that in that space, I have a few family members that play in that space, and they're able to provide a lot of context when it comes to real estate there. So with the equities and the retirement investment plans, once I was able to kind of educate my friends or at least find their cost basis or expense ratios and show them how their advisor might not have his best interest at heart for them, then I clearly knew I understood it. And due to my wife's great taskmaster skills, I have those behaviors and habits of capital preservation just slammed into me. So that's where I would go. Is as far as when to know, that's a great question. Maybe I struggle with that one. I would say when you're able to educate others on it, it's time to move on to another item, another big rock task there.
So from landlord to landlord and house flipper to house flipper, you and I know the pitfalls that can come and go with owning properties, owning multiple properties, which we both, I believe, do. I know you have at least one up in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
I believe you have another one somewhere else, correct?
Yep.
Perfect. So you know how that goes. You have multiple tenants, you have multiple emails, yep, you have multiple everything, right? And I do the same. So I just finished up, just closed on my last flip on Friday. So walking with that check was a damn good feeling for sure. And now, obviously, what am I doing now? I'm looking for either the next flip or the next rental property. But I can do that now because I've created these called systems and processes.
Yes.
So talking to the people listening to this podcast who may or may not – oh, that's a good wife right there. Brings you the drink. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Got a winner.
Exactly. Talking to the people listening to this podcast right now who are at that point where Joe and his wife are right now. So basically speaking to people like that who have read a crap ton on Bigger Pockets, Ben Liebowitz, I mean, all the other things, Millionaire Next Door, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, they're doing all that crap, right? They read all those books. They have an amazing amount of information, but they are usually scared. And I know I was before I took that first leap. What do you put in place before you buy that first property? What is your go-to? Like, what did you do?
Okay. Let's just walk through that scared mindset, right? Let's walk through the coach running the warm-up for the very first time, 100 athletes in front of all the other coaches. It's a big moment for a young coach. You do it. You grab the whistle, you do it, you fake it till you make it a little bit, but you've been trained and developed and you've layered your education and habits up to the point where you can perform. So I just take it back a little bit. Let's reverse engineer it, steal a term from you, coach, and let's just say this to somebody. Great, you want to do real estate investment. Let's start with this. You're scared. But someday you know you want to own your own home. You know that. You want to own your own home. Let's just take your own home to start with. And sure, maybe you want to do a 30-year or a 15-year fixed interest rate, whatever. But I like the idea, regardless of that, of you owning your own home. What I would tell to you then to reduce the amount of scaredness you have is, do you plan on changing your HVAC filters? Do you plan on changing the batteries in your smoke alarms? Do you plan on mowing the lawn, de-weeding the garden? Do you plan on trimming the bushes? Do you plan on making sure there's plenty of insulation in the attic? Do you plan on painting anything? Very general homeowner upkeep items, right? Like ant traps, wherever you might live. So since you know you eventually want to own one single home, but you know over here there's this investment, what is it you have to know about owning a home? Principal, interest, taxes, capital expenditures, and insurance. So you have to have these five expenses. So as a good steward of money, you have to prepare for them. You can escrow them and do it monthly. You can pay them once a year in a big fat check. And as far as capital expenditures, you have to be knowledgeable enough to understand your hot water heater, your ACs, your roof. They will need repair in the long term. So first, let's get really educated about this, us buying one home. Second, let's understand if we want to do 3.5% down and pay mortgage insurance until we're over 20%? Or do we want to put 10 or 20% down? Let's understand who we are and how much debt to income ratio we're comfortable with, right? And what we qualify for with our credit scores. After we have that, let's say we have a goal of saving for 20% plus closing costs, plus an additional $10,000 of up regulation, upkeep, right? So after we have that capital, then it becomes, would you like to house hack? So do you want to buy a duplex, triplex, or fourplex? Because you can still get a primary mortgage under that. Or would you like to buy a 4-3 and rent out two of the rooms and technically two of the bathrooms for guests? And depending on your age and your commitment, whether you're single, newly engaged, or you have children, that might vary. If you have children, you might like the triplex aspect of it. If you're single, you might really like, as a matter of fact, my wife did this when she was single. She house hacked two of the three bedrooms in her house, brand new house. She didn't pay anything because they covered principal, interest, insurance, and they paid the taxes. So she was living for free. When my wife worked in London, I think our second year in Philadelphia, I house hacked. We had a 5-bedroom home. 4 of them were rented out. They were rented out for cash. It was great because for 10 months, she didn't live there. So that was another example of two examples of house hacking a single family home. Now you can do that with multiple doors. That's where I would take somebody. We're scared, we're nervous, but let's look at everything that a normal house owner does. They weatherproof the house sometimes. They take care of the windows here in a hurricane. Wouldn't you take care of the windows and hurricane impact rate them in case you had a rental property here? The answer is yes. You know, so you're going to do the exact same things you would as a homeowner if you were living there. It's just you're not, and somebody else is going to pay for everything for you. That's kind of how I'd walk them through it well before we ever think about buying 50-unit complexes.
So yeah. Let me jump in. So it's an personal example for us, right? So we, and again, the phrase has a lot to it, but it's living within or beyond your means.
Right.
So for us, we bought an older house, relatively cost effective for our means. My mortgage is not a hard payment for me to make, right? Yeah. Compared to, I have friends, they have beautiful houses.
Yeah.
If they're $100 or $200 one way or the other, for someone, their mortgage is tough. So yeah. We personally, and again, driving into us, Rach and I looked at it as, how can we get what we want, location, right? We have family. We went from New York where we had no immediate family. We had a great circle of people we worked with, you know,
right.
Cox, you know, Emily, there's a phenomenal human, Jimmy, who I worked with, but they weren't we didn't have family, and we had kids, and we wanted family. So we moved to Connecticut. We found the house that fit our budget to live within our means so that our debt-to-income ratios made sense. Our monthly liabilities were manageable. We always had positive cash flow to put savings, projects, whatever we wanted. Yeah. But we sat down and looked at time versus cost versus demands of life. And our time versus cost versus demands of life is to your point of, how do you do those things? You have to be aware of, are you changing light bulbs? You have an electrician change light bulbs for $60 an hour for $1 for a light bulb he's charging you $5 for.
Just change the outlets in my house. That's $85 an outlet if you want to hire it out. But yep. I did it for much cheaper than that.
Exactly. So, but we're at the point now, and I want to ask you this because, again, now you have a daughter, right? You have a demand of life. And I classify
life creep.
Demands of life, same thing, life creep. So time versus cost, right? The first 2 years we lived here, I always mowed the lawn. I did all the yard work. And I used to joke with my wife, I did $20,000 of yard work this year because that's what it would cost to have someone do it for us. So time versus cost versus demand of life, we've started to outsource. So every now and again, I'll hire the landscaper for 3 weeks when I know those 3 weeks we have family events, we have vacation, we have stuff where if I take the time to do it, I've lost the time for the demands of life and the cost, the outlay of $60 to mow my lawn.
Absolutely.
It's worth it, even though it's an expense. So how are you starting to manage that? And I reference it from a family standpoint, because as three guys with kids, and one of the things we've all talked about, and I've talked with each of you, and I know you two have definitely talked about it in your short conversation so far. We all value family first, but the demands of the job are so high. How are you spending money to manage that balance effectively? Because I think one of the things people are going to listen, or who are listening to this, is I know I'm busy. I know I don't have a ton of money now, but how do I spend the best bang for my buck on the, you know, life creep demands of life? For me, it's paying someone to mow my lawn so I have 3 hours on a Saturday to go to my kid's soccer thing versus missing soccer because I'm mowing the lawn. What are you doing?
So you hit on something real quick right before that, and that was essentially savings rate. I think that's a big thing that I need to just hit home with our examples. Right now, we have a savings rate net income of over 60%. We've had at times a net income savings rate of over, like what I mean is we've lived on less than 25% of our net income. So when people talk about wealth accumulation, the first thing is get your income up. The second thing is get your savings rate percentage right, and then worry about your investments. That stuff comes afterwards. Clean up your past debt. That's right there. That's number three. Start worrying about that past debt. Get those student loans, those cards, those credit cards, and that car. Get that crap done. Just move on past that crap. And then the next is take care of, like, when you're 60 years and old, like, think about what car are you driving when you're 72? Start caring a little bit more about that guy. Like, we've all seen an elderly family member get around. Like, do you want to get around in a jalopy, or do you want to be able to roll up in something that can just, like, automatically lift you out and do things, whatever, right? So start picking how you want to live in the future right now. And then from there, go ahead and think about, how do I retire before 60? But going on your point, time value of money, I think, is even bigger. When people look at so much, and I think we could even talk a little bit, tie that into good debt, bad debt, in a sense that people lose sight of, well, if I'm paying, like right now, I can go out and get a 15-year mortgage for 2.25% interest. I can get a 30-year for 2.65, 2.7% interest rate. That's almost inflation. I have a CD. We have money in a CD that earns 3.3% return. That's nothing, but it's like a preservation metric with the money. If the market's going to return me after fees and inflation 8%, if I just kind of leave it in the Vanguard 500 or whatever big S&P 500 index you choose to, that's time value of money. I can make more money investing versus paying down debt at that rate. Now, if I have debt like student loan at 8%, it makes a whole lot of sense to start getting that cut down right now. If I have debt on a credit card and I'm paying 19% APR on that, get that done now. So it's understanding what debt you have. Some people believe there's no good debt. Some people believe in a whole different side of that bell curve. And some people are in the middle and they kind of understand, hey, there's some good and there's some really stupid, immature, bad debt. So get a strong understanding of that, along with backtracking to a strong savings rate. That's what's going to allow you to actually do the things you want to do in life. So for instance, tying that together, you and your wife have a good savings rate, which allows you to have good priorities. You prioritize being at your family's events over mowing your lawn now. It doesn't mean you're above it. It doesn't mean it's beneath you or anything. It just means that for that time, you can maximize more value for your family members, your community, by being there, being the dad that's actually present, by paying that $60. Where we're at is, yes, it started 2 years ago because of the hours and demands we were both working. We paid for lawn care, bugs, you know, all that. So we hired that out. I'm trying to think of other things we hire out. We do that now, lawn care, mostly because getting here in Florida, things are a lot different as far as like understanding all the vegetation and stuff. And and just kind of getting that moving forward. Didn't want to deal with it during the remodeling. But yeah, you don't own a lawnmower.
I really narrowed down what you can do lawn-wise for sure.
Yeah, don't own one.
A pair of scissors.
Yeah. Might have to borrow my neighbor's. I got a guy. He's great. It's $110 a month. He's my dude. Let's go.
There you go.
So
a couple of things you touched on that I think are awesome. I suck at this, so I'm glad y'all brought this up because I'm terrible about this. Like, I was out there mowing a couple of my rental properties, and I was mowing the lawn, and I just thought to myself, what the fuck am I doing? Why am I doing this? So I literally, that was the moment. Was finally, I was just like, screw it. Like, this next year, as we come up, and obviously Georgia gets super warm, super fast. So like February, March of next year, I'm just going to hire a lawn guy to go out there. Nothing fancy, just trim the bushes, cut the grass. But I went through and I listened to somebody that day. I forget what podcast it was, but I was listening to somebody and he said, look, I said a hard amount of money. I say I am worth $100 to $150 an hour.
Yeah.
This task doesn't cost me that much, then I'm going to go ahead and farm it out. And it just made so much sense to me. And I've been the guy who's gone over and fixed the floor when a tenant steps through it, excuse me. And I've been the guy to go over there and fix stuff at different units. And I've been that guy. And I'm to that point now where, A, it's not good for my wife, right? She gets upset. She gets angry. She wants me to be there more, which I think everybody who has a wife would understand, or spouse or significant other or whatever. And then my kid, man, I hate that look when I leave, period. Even if I'm leaving to go get her something, I still hate that look.
Yeah.
You know, it gives me that look, and I know I'm going somewhere where I could pay somebody $100 to take care of it. I'm just going to go ahead and I'm just going to ball that $100 bill up and I'm just going to throw it at somebody.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to sit there and let them do it because it's just not worth it to me anymore. And I feel from my, you know, strength and conditioning, we all consider it our blue collar, which I don't think strength and conditioning is blue collar anymore because so many of these kids are bougie. They live in bougie weight rooms. A lot of them don't have tool kits. A lot of them don't know how to fix the freaking equipment anymore. A lot of them don't have to clean the goddamn equipment.
Yeah.
A lot of them, as even as interns, didn't clean the equipment, which is absurd to me.
Exactly.
Certainly a conversation for another time. We are not a freaking group.
Let me interject one thing. When I was an intern at UConn and a schmuck, I was a nobody. I was told to clean.
It hasn't changed.
Exactly. I was told to clean Shankman. Brand new, one of the greatest facilities at the day in college football.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I walk into that weight room expecting it's just me. Jerry Martin, the director, is on his hands and knees cleaning the dirt out of the tiles. Okay? Every single one of his staff members was doing something.
Yeah.
And I walked in and saw that and said, well, one, lead by example, and you got Jerry is Jerry, and God rest his soul. But that was where the precedent was set, and that's how I learned. And I feel bad for the kids who didn't have mentors like that.
Amen. Yeah. I can't argue that. But going back to that, coming from my blue-collar background, like growing up, we didn't have a ton of money. Dad was in the military, wasn't making a lot, right? So, I mean, we weren't poor by any means. I don't mean it like that. But we definitely were taught the value of a dollar. And being able to throw money at something and make the problem go away is just a new thing for me. I've never been able to do that before. It made me honestly almost feel guilty the first time I did it. You know, but now I'm realizing that it does afford me that opportunity to go spend time with my wife and my kid, which is just important.
Yeah. I look at it too. You're exactly right. It's time value of money, and whether or not you're paying off debts now or you're accumulating more assets now, or is something as small as the lawn care, right? Or hiring out something that's going wrong on one of your units or properties, especially if it's a rental unit, it is a tax write-off, number one, right? So there is a inherent benefit to that. Another example might be property management. So when you're in a new state, one thing I've stolen from other investors is I like the idea of, even if you want to manage that property, which there's nothing wrong with that, what's wrong with an 8% fee right away in a new state, a new territory, having somebody with experience, 15 plus years of experience, be your property manager? They're going to know exactly what wording's in the leasing. You can take that to your lawyer, get that examined, see if that's appropriate. They're going to know who to call for the plumbing, any sort of maintenance. And that's going to give you kind of an uptick in knowledge. We talk about mentors, whether it's a tribe or whether it's one, right? There's one solid mentor that's going to lead you to their tribe. And then essentially, if you choose to remove that fee to increase your cash flow, refine your business efficiencies a little bit, then you're going to see that you can still call that same plumber. They still want the same job for the same price or similar. And now you have access to that network and how they went about some sort of a pet amendment or some sort of lease extension, or how they went month to month in that state, because each state is unique. And so that is one way of paying an 8 to 10% fee that could get you up to speed quicker on the legality and the community to take care of that property.
To add on to that, man, I would definitely, my CPA has become a huge, lifesaver for me. I was shocked at kind of how easy it was to bring my information to him. And obviously I've cut down the bill by doing some of my QuickBooks myself just to get him started. It's like, what, some of the hours, but yep. He comes in with these ideas for saving money. That's been awesome. I'd also recommend you get a great realtor, right? So when you move to Florida, you worked with probably a realtor. That's the person you could talk to. And if they suck, no problem. Move on to the next one and find somebody who's investor friendly. That's another huge tip that's really helped me out a lot. I actually work with three different realtors. They bring me a deal I like, I use them for it. If they're the first one to bring it to me, that's the guy I use, man. I'm going with the hot hand, going back to the coaching, analogies. And then finally, as you find handymen, plumbers, electricians, whoever, I mean, I've got a whole Excel file of exactly who I use and exactly what type of jobs to use them for. If I'm rewiring a whole house, I'm calling Rich. If I'm rewiring one outlet, like I'm calling you from Florida, you're coming up, you're staying with me for the weekend.
Yeah, for that price, price is too good.
Absolutely. A $50 bottle of freaking scotch and we're in, Like we're done. That's a win right there.
That's a win.
So I think, at this point in the conversation, I got a couple things. One, I think I'm going to have to do a part two here where we start, and these are some of my notes. Obviously, again, as a goofball, you take the notes. Which, shameless plug, Rocketbook.
Yeah, love me some Rocketbook.
Rocketbook, digital book. They're a Boston-based company. I'm a Boston-based guy. I'll give a shameless plug. We do not currently get paid by anybody. The Rocketbook, if you're listening.
Yes.
So accounting, right? For people who don't understand where you were.
Most bourbon companies, if you're listening.
Accounting, right? So when I did my MBA, I'm in accounting classes. My MBA is in management, right? General management. And I did that because I parlayed all the skills I had as a coach and I got them credentials and I checked boxes and I said, I'm going to learn the skills of management. Some of those, finance, accounting, IT, all the aspects of how to run a business in the current day. Mm-hmm. Time value of money is an accounting principle. Future value of money, what Jake was talking about, adjusting for inflation. If these things are totally off your reservation, get in a 101 accounting class. If you're in college, go sit in it and listen. If you're out in the professional world or doing something else as a personal trainer, a basic accounting book can help you start to understand, one, the terms, and two, the concepts. So I think that was huge. I think we need part two of this conversation to talk LLCs, SC Corps, taxes, leveraging write-offs, understanding professional services, when do people do it? I think Matt hit a huge thing. He does QuickBooks himself to prep, because by doing that, he saves hours and hourly cost. So, I mean, I have QuickBooks on my phone. My credit cards are linked to it. Things are write-offs. Zoom is a business expense for me because this is a business expense, right? Yep. Other things, and again, our kids are little. A conversation around when our kids get older, there's some things within the taxes about being able to use them as taxable write-offs, paying your children. And again, all legal. And this is the big key thing. Again, we're having a conversation. We're not advice. Yep. If you do things legally that are allowed and you're intelligent with the way you bring your effort, you can generate some additional savings to you and your family.
Well, Coach, so just with that too, to tie that in, to kind of, I know what you're getting at there, just so kind of everybody understands, the tax code is written in a way to inspire people to create opportunities for other people, to stimulate business, to stimulate revenue, to stimulate the economy, to house and shelter people. So there are incentives for the individuals who create those opportunities, whether it be jobs or housing. So it's it's not that you're ever like trying to skate by or do something illegal. It's just that you're actually trying to follow the letter of the law as it is written in the tax code. And there just happens to be some great advantageous advantages for everyone in there.
Agreed. So I think we're going to table that all for part two, because I think we could go on for a while. The other one is, we do have, again, and this is something to be said to the audience, we all have families. Me and Matt are undertaking this project. It was Matt's idea. I wanted to help him with it. We scheduled it to manage our family life, right? Like, again, it's time. Yeah. It demands life. So we book these. When we do these, we have multiple people. We actually have to start getting ready for another one tonight. But I have one question for you, and then we're going to drive into kind of tonight. We're going to do it rapid fire. We kind of have our big three that we always cover. Yeah. It's the gesticulation with the hands thing. It's my Italian Greek thing.
I've got a lot of it going on.
Yeah. I try and keep the notebook and the pen down. So I got one question, and then we'll hit you with the three big ones that we always ask everybody. My question is, you reference fast learning, being a go-getter, being open to learning. You're talking about being on a flight and striking up a conversation because you have interpersonal communication skills and the guy happens to be a money manager, happens to be a real estate guy.
Yep.
How do you take the intensity in which you operated as a coach, drive it into action dealing with average people? Because I think one of the things that most people who are listening to this are, is intense, willing to learn fast, and most importantly, steamroll you if you need to be steamrolled. Right. How do you manage that side of Coach Cox with Jake Cox, the guy interacting with people who are quote unquote normal?
Yeah, I think you breathe through the moment and you have some empathy, right? Not everyone is you. You know, it's not always looking back in a mirror. So have empathy for the moment, the individuals, and then also just understand that maybe some people are, we always talk about with our athletes, meet them where they're at. Well, guess what? Sometimes you have to meet the guys at the soccer practice where they're at, you know, of the parents of the kids. They're in a different life, a different spectrum, a different bubble. They have a different tribe. So meet them where they're at. I talk about connecting with friends daily because I need a stronger tribe. I need people of stronger mindsets. I can't allow myself to become the average of this five people. I need to associate with these five people as much as possible. And it is difficult, but if you think about it, you were doing it in the weight rooms. You were doing it on the practice fields. You always gravitated toward the people that were always doing something better in 1 year, 5 years. So it's not easy, but truthfully, nothing worth doing really is easy.
That's fair. And that actually parlays perfectly into one of our, you know, three questions we ask everybody at the end of the show. And this is that, who coaches you and why them specifically? You've mentioned a ton of books. You were clearly like a self-starter and a self-guy. So my question is, who coaches you? Is it one person, many people?
I'm going to say it's definitely my wife. I know that's crazy, but Jen, you know, she's a, I think she got her master's. She did. She got her master's in biochemical engineering and she got an MBA from Wharton. I mean, I'm sleeping next to, I'm with a miniature CEO, a high level executive all the time. And if we're not cutting it again in that wheel of life, your social cultural life there, then guess what? I get to hear about it. So I enjoy that feedback. I enjoy that growth. I understand that we want to strive to be in the top 3%. We're not worried about being average. The bell curve was made so that you have this side of the bell curve. And that's where we want to go in all areas of life. It's not saying we can be there all the time. So I would say one of my biggest blessings, and this would be to anybody when we talk about financial longevity, success financially, would certainly be choose your partner, choose your spouse very wisely. I got an A+ winner. I kicked it off the field. I won. I just did. I won. That would be my one pick.
That was a great answer for sure. going to the next one, what was your best investment when you were coaching or post for your money? Let's go that way. What was your best investment for your money that you spent less than $500 on?
Best investment. Well, wow. Shoot. I would probably say, you know, probably some of the lunches with like a local coach. Like I had a soccer coach at a place I was at that had 14 rental properties. Take them out to lunch, right? So I would either say something like that, like an inexpensive seminar lunch with somebody doing it, or I would say the amount of books I've read. Yeah.
I love it. It's perfect. And then finally, to finish up, how do you manage your personal time and kind of keep that balance? I know you've got that 17-month-old running around, and then you've got that 6-hour window. So how do you find that balance between the two?
So to start off, you asked me how I was doing day to day. And honestly, coach, what I really enjoy doing nowadays is sending my Whoop Band knowledge. Again, we don't have any show sponsors yet, but if you guys want to be sponsored, Whoop Band, I like sending the amount of sleep I get to all my friends still coaching right now, because I like to send the fact that sometimes I need to go to bed at 9 and wake up at 7. I just, you know, sometimes I need that, you know? So sometimes that's just me. Maybe you don't. That's what I like to do, Greg.
I love how at the beginning of this, you preface when you talk to people, you don't do that. But then at the end, you're like, I sneak it in sometimes.
I balance it pretty well, coach. I balance it pretty well.
Sounds like you're crushing it. Dude, you absolutely.
Pen and paper, write them out. Pen and paper, sit down, write it out, and go.
That's perfect, man. Hey, it was a pleasure finally meeting you. Joe did a fantastic job of getting you on the show. I'm going to let him sign you off for sure. I appreciate it, man. Thank you for coming on.
Grateful for the time.
Jake, appreciate you having you here. And again, one of the things we wanted to do is exactly this, right? We had nothing to do with training. Yeah, we made some references and we alluded to things because it's what people understand, what our audience is going to understand, because that's the world they're in.
Yes.
But one of the biggest things I want the audience to understand is if you're listening to this and you're the 20-ish year old CSCS undergrad person, don't think that's enough. It's okay if it is, but if you want to be exceptional and you want to be not ordinary, don't do ordinary things. And again, we're just in the platform. We have the time, the space, the ability. I have a master's degree and I have an MBA. That's two, not the same thing. They're different, right? I have two of them. Matt, he's a strength coach, a master's degree. He has an RD, right? He's not only A, but he's B, right? Talking to you, same thing. Right. I don't offhand. I don't know all your credentials like that, but I know you have more than one. Right.
Yep.
Anyone listening to this knows, holy shit, that guy knows a lot about business and finances and stuff because you chose to be multifaceted.
Right? Absolutely.
I think the key to this is if you want to be exceptional as a coach, you have to be multifaceted, not only with your athletes, but in all aspects that deal with it. And the key one right now in this day and age is business.
Most certainly. Absolutely, coach. You said it correctly, and I couldn't say it any better, but 100%, especially with the time that people had and the way things may be shifting in the future. Absolutely. No matter what profession you're in, but certainly the profession we all come from.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. I'll leave it open to you. Any plugs, anything you want to talk about, any particular book or anything that you want anyone listening to this to be able to take away right now to do tomorrow?
Yeah. One book I always loved within coaching or people is The Speed of Trust by Stephen M.R. Covey. So it's Stephen Covey's son, The Speed of Trust. Financial book I always loved is Money, Mastering the Game by Tony Robbins. Highly recommend so many other books, but those two I would take home any day of the week. There have been two that I've gifted more than anything else. You can reach me at my email, Jacob. jacobjcox@gmail.com. Anytime, any questions, strength, conditioning, money, finance, retirement, real estate. I'd love to help. I'm not, you know, it's not legal guidance or anything like that, but I'd love to help and guide you through it. And I'm just really fortunate and blessed to have been a coach in this profession and now moving on to other things and being very progressive and growth mindset. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for the time.
Absolutely.
See ya.